You're a SaaS founder. You've built something solid, but growth still feels harder than it should. Most SaaS companies don't fail because of bad tech. They fail because they've never become a must-have to the right customer. This podcast is here to change that. I'm Ton Dobbe, and this is the Remarkable SaaS Podcast. Every week, I talk to founders in the trenches, facing friction, making bold moves, and building companies that last. We dig into real choices around focus, positioning, customer pool, team alignment, the things that separate forgettable software from the ones that people can't live without. No hype, no hacks, just honest conversations to help you build something that people would miss if it was gone. If your SaaS should be indispensable but isn't yet, this is your podcast. Let's get into it. The guest of our podcast this week is Rex Gurchius, founder of AssetPanda.
It's not about being perfect, and it's also not about being right. It's about being curious and having the ability and the wherewithal to have grit and to deal with failure and learn from that failure, adapt to succeed.
This is Rex. We dig into how we build a business that funds itself by prioritizing client problems over investor timelines. You'll hear how we pivoted three times without outside capital and why staying curious matters more than being right. The conversation reveals what 13 years of customer-funded building creates and why the turtle beats the rabbit. Well, hi, Rex. Thank you for making the time available today and being the guest on the podcast.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
That's a pleasure. It's an honor because I've been studying what your company has been up to over the last 13 years. And it's going to be, I got so many questions and so many things that I'd like to dig a little bit deeper in. But before we start talking about your company, AssetPanda, a little bit about you. What drives you? What gives you energy as an entrepreneur?
Oh, it's interesting. For me, it's very primal. You know, I grew up in an entrepreneurial family. My father owned a bakery. And when I was a kid, we'd go to work with him all the time. And I thought as a kid that we made everybody's bread, and like maybe you had the automobile company and another family had the telecom company. I just thought that's the way it worked. And, you know, when you're the child of a first generation immigrant, immigrants tend to work incredibly hard. And they're focused on a thing or on a business. You know, my dad spoke five languages and English was his worst. So it was, he was very much just focused on work constantly. So that's the work ethic was ingrained. And I liked the concepts of inventing and creating. You know, I decided my purpose, I wanted to set a good example for my kids. I want them to see me working hard at something that helps the communities that we all live in and provides a valuable service to all of our clients. So for me, I've always been wired to build my own companies, build my own businesses, and solve problems that help make people's lives easier.
Yeah. You're not the only one in the family, I heard.
Yeah, no, my older brother Dan did a pretty good job with that with MailChimp, for sure.
Exactly. So yeah, that shows what being part of the right family in the right context can do to how you then flourish later on in life. And actually
Absolutely.
Taking the positive learnings from it rather than maybe the negatives, you know, because it must have been hard in the first year.
Oh, yeah. There definitely is the good and the bad. A lot of people think that the entrepreneurial life is a very sexy kind of life, and there's a lot of wonderful things about it, but it also is incredibly difficult. And having a strong mental fortitude, having grit and perseverance to stick with something, realizing that many times these ideas and these products need to continuously pivot and become something that may be different from the original vision of the founder. Just having a non-rigid way of looking at this stuff and being flexible, I think, is really important.
Yeah. No, that's exactly what I was aiming at. But actually, I was taking it even further back to your father being an immigrant and starting from scratch in a completely different country where you don't know people, where you don't speak the language. And still, yeah. So you get a lot from that, from your parents. Fascinating.
Absolutely.
So yeah, nice bridge to the company, AssetPanda. What I saw is that it was founded in 2012. That was, for a lot of people, you can't even think about what that world was like then. So there was no AI. There was mobile. There was a little bit of social, I guess. But what was the big idea behind the business? What was the problem that you saw that wasn't solved, and you thought, okay, I'm gonna do it?
So I had a business at the time that was a consulting business, and we grew that company fast, from startup to a few hundred employees in a fairly short period of time. And a lot of those employees needed high-end computers, so advanced graphic processors, lots of RAM. So we bought a lot of expensive machines for these people, and they would go on projects, come off projects, go to a different project. And we noticed that we continuously had an issue finding the equipment and identifying the equipment. And at the time, we were using still what I think is the world's most ubiquitous accounting system with QuickBooks. And we'd run a fixed asset ledger, and it would tell us the depreciated amount. It would tell us the date we bought it. It would give us a little bit of information about what it was, but it would never tell us where it was, what condition it was in, or any other information about the asset. So then we started using spreadsheets. And I noticed every quarter, every month, when we do an audit on the equipment, the field level managers would send me back basically the same spreadsheet. And it wasn't updated. It was clearly something they weren't focused on. And when I talked to the managers, they just tell me, listen, it's just a real pain in the neck to have to update this spreadsheet, and I don't have it with me every time I see the equipment. So that's really started the idea. And at the time, I was looking for a new business to start. I had several criteria for it. I wanted it to solve a global problem that everybody had, no matter what language they spoke or what country they lived in. So I was really looking for something that could be a big thing that we could solve on a global basis. And asset tracking, I think, fits that bill fairly well. We're in over 65 countries. We've got clients in many, many different genres and different use cases, studies, and personas. So it is a big problem that the world has. And now you have AI coming in, which allows us the opportunity to solve a lot of the issues that our customers have in a very eloquent, quick way. So as the world evolves, I think it becomes a bigger problem. Cybersecurity, identifying almost every device that's of consequence now has got some kind of connectivity to the internet, which NFC, Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, and all these devices need to be accounted for, and we need detailed information on them. And then we need to make it easier for people once they have something they want to do with the device. If they need training on a device, if they need information about warranties, insurance information, creative ways of using the device, maybe looking to replace the device and finding quick anecdotal information about what a competitive products are and what they should look at. There's lots of nuance to asset tracking. When you think about it, for companies, the most valuable asset any company will ever have are its people, and then right behind it's the tools they use to do their job. So
True,
we
true.
want to be the global standard for how they track and manage everything that their employees use to get their work done, basically.
Fascinating vision to have or ambition to have, the idea, what I like about this is you don't put yourself in a particular category. It's it is a problem that is evolving, and you see that when you start in 2012, what people needed is a completely different thing of what people expect these days. And it will continue to go like that.
100%.
Yeah.
It will.
That is the fascinating part. And it's really about like, what is the business you're really in?
Yes, 100%. Yeah, ultimately, we're in the business of saving people time and making their lives easier. That's really what it comes down to. And when you see the application and how it's evolved, and we're an agile shop, so we continually iterate on the product. And then the introduction of AI into the application and the things that it allows our customers to do, it just we just continue to look at things that can save them more time and more money. And that's what our focus is.
Exactly. That is how the things evolve in the right way. And this also how you stay relevant. Because I mean, the number of people that I have on the podcast and the number of people that I get in my inbox every week to be on it, and so many are just from 2025. And a lot of them, I mean, are that I spoke, for example, in 2018, some of them have gone already. This thing is just going at such a pace. So I've got some questions
Yes.
also around how do you stay relevant in this industry? But before we could dive into that, let's start with more foundational thing, because of course it was a technology problem, and you started with something. And you told me also that the first couple of years it was a lot about experimentation and seeing where things would fit. But if you now look back in hindsight, what has been something that you decided back in the days that's proved, that's actually fundamental for where you are today?
It's a good question. So in the early days, we came to a fork in the road, and the fork in the road was essentially, do you build a purpose-built product for a very specific niche market, or do you build a platform that's configurable to any market? And both strategies have their pluses and minuses, but foundationally, we decided to build the highly flexible no-code system. So the idea would be, we're not going to make you fit your processes to use our software. We're going to make our software fit your processes. So that was a very tough thing to tackle because, when you're developing software, if you're developing a very specific thing, it's very easy to get granular about it and to hyper-focused on a specific area. But when you're doing it on a grand scale and you're making it a platform that's ubiquitous and across industry, it causes challenges on how you actually build it and then the scalability of it. So I'll give you a couple quick examples. So there was a study that the US government did back in 2010, 2011, and they talked about the average pieces of equipment a company purchases per employee. And the number that they came up with was seven. So think about like laptop, keyboard, printer, maybe mobile phone, could be a server, could be something for the phones, but roughly seven. So I built the math on the back end architecture of the system to accommodate roughly at least seven items per employee. So if somebody had 1 million employees, it's 7 million, or more, realistically, if it's 50 employees, maybe it's 350 assets, sort of thing. And that does scale differently. If you're an equipment rental business, you might have 15 employees and 10,000 assets.
Exactly.
So as we were servicing the marketplace, we started to run into use cases where they had 5 million, 10 million items. And the system, ultimately, the early stages wasn't really architected for that. So Pro and the work we've done there, it scales incredibly nicely. Millions and millions of record and instantaneous responses. That's an example of the evolution of the platform. We thought people would use it one way, and they did use it that way, but they also used it many other ways that taught us that the system and the scalability of the platform needed to be even more extensible than it was at the very early stages.
Yeah, exactly. So what made you decide we go platform rather than more of a product that was more out of the box, doing one particular thing really well? What made that decision? What drove it?
Ultimately, it was just looking at the TAM, the total addressable market, how big it was across the world and what it looked like in segments. And we believed that we could service the niche segments in a very eloquent way and ultimately lower the cost of ownership for anybody buying our system. So, in a given day, we might have out of the lead base we have, 10% of them might be a certain type, 20% another type, and so forth. And we were competing against purpose-built products for the different areas, and we were winning the vast majority of the time. So we found that there was a lot of benefit to people being on an application that serviced lots of different markets because you'd get great ideas from a market that was completely agnostic from another market, but both of them benefited from the changes. So we saw that as a huge opportunity.
It is a huge opportunity. Well, that brings me to another thing. That first of all, that foundational decision on yes, it's going to be platform. I understand the total addressable market part. But then, of course, it comes down to okay, the 10 might be high. There might be enough companies that could buy this or could want this. The question at the end is why you? So, what have you then done
Right.
to make it, well, to talk about one of the traits in my book, aim to be different, not just better?
So for us, it was about listening to the customer's needs and wants and changing the application to adapt to those needs and wants over time. So for us, we didn't want to just sell a product that was a product, like it's this pen, we're selling you this pen. It's the same pen every time. It comes in four different colors, but it's a pen, and you know exactly what it does. We wanted to take the approach that we were solving business issues that our customers had, and we wanted our customers to use their creativity when looking at the capability of configuring the platform to solve multiple business problems at the same time. So I'd say that's the secret sauce of AssetPanda. We've given our clients the ability to adapt our platform to exactly their use case. It makes them more efficient. It makes it easier for people to train because they're, essentially putting their processes into our system.
That's true. And you bring up a very interesting word there, that word creativity. I mean, I've always, for some reason, always been in the industry where the products that I've been involved with are also extremely flexible. But it also creates a sort of a problem, because some people are not creative, they just can't see it.
Yes,
So then, how do you go
100%.
about communicating that to the market and filtering out exactly those companies that are a perfect fit for you, and possibly even better, detracting the ones that will never be a fan?
It's actually a wonderful question and very appropriate as you're building a company like this, because you can get lost to customers, but are you getting the right kind of customers that benefit from the application significantly? So for us, it was a lot of trial and error working with different customers and seeing different key attributes that if the customers had those attributes, that they would find the application very valuable and beneficial. At the same time, building out a template type concept so people that didn't have the creativity, didn't have the time, would just be able to very simply, quick, I'm an electrical distributor, for example, and this is the skill set and the types of things that I want to track. And for years, we accomplished this with pretty detailed implementation where we would work with the client and customize the application. The new world with Pro is leveraging AI to its fullest capability where, for example, that same electrical distributor, instead of having a detailed discussion with an implementation person and really describing their business, you go into our AI tool called Ursa. And you just simply prompt Ursa and you tell Ursa you are an electrical distribution company. The more information you give it, the better the responses are. But you give it detail. You can talk to it. You don't have to type. And you just describe your business. You can even just put your URL in for your website. And then Ursa comes back and recommends a build. So the human goes in and decides, oh, yeah, I like this. I don't like this. I like this. I don't like this. So it radically reduces the amount of time that it takes to go live. And it gives clients the unique perspective that AI can. It helps them remember things or think about things that maybe they weren't thinking about when they first started the concept of an implementation. So it's pretty amazing how AI and Ursa in particular and AssetPanda is totally changing this the industry and the game. It'll look very, very different here in the coming months.
Oh my God, you're opening up a completely different can of questions that I could go into here.
Oh
Let's not
yeah.
well. I'll definitely come back on that because I mean, it brings back memories of also about the time that I was, for example, at Unit 4, and we had an implementation department. I'm not sure. Let's ask the question: how has your implementation department thought of this? Because I mean, this could also be sometimes you got these equipes or these teams in your company, and they all do try to do their best possible thing. And on the implementation side, it's like okay, we implement, and we reach also certain targets, and now they are like out of business.
It's different. So we have an amazing implementation team. We've got some incredibly talented people. And I think for the concept of implementation, it is going to change and evolve. But they become more like consultants versus it's easier to configure the application. The clients can do it. The implementation people internally can do it much faster now. And it changes their role. They become more like customer success kind of people, coaching our clients and interacting with them to help them get more and more out of the system. But the mundane aspects of implementation that might have happened before, like, okay, tell me what fields are important to you, Ursa can automate all of those things for them now. And we see our implementation people migrating to more of like a consulting type role with our clients, existing clients, and then helping answer questions for prospects because it's, I call it the world of AssetPanda. When you add AI to a no-code platform that's highly configurable, it's like your imagination is your limitation.
That's
So
true.
so the implementation people for us, it's not something where they are no longer necessary. As a matter of fact, it's the opposite. They don't have to do the mundane stuff anymore, and they become more like strategic consultants for our clients, and they really help with the success of the clients on the platform and help them dream of different ways of using it.
Got more on this in a couple of minutes. I first want to zoom in a little bit about that period whereby you were experimenting, and then at some point you started to get traction. And for what you told me, that was around 2017, 5 years after founding the company. And then I saw
Yes.
some statistics which blew my mind in the first place. 3,500 time growth in 3 years' time.
In 3 years.
What happened when you started to see that traction? What did it?
Looking back, it was understanding product market fit, basically. It was understanding pricing and then changing the concept of how we were going to sell the application. You have to understand that most of my entrepreneurial endeavors prior to were very much old school sales. So it was phone calls, it was meetings, it was traditional outbound sales. And where we really kind of crossed the chasm is we started to understand content marketing. So we got very aggressive about creating information, white papers, case studies, testimonials, reviews of our application. And once we started to heavily content market, we developed a very solid inbound lead funnel. And at the same time, we had a more mature product, and we understood or set pricing standards that were fitting the market. And when we hit a few of those things well, it just bounced. So it was a lot of trial and error and just figuring out product market fit and how to market it and then how to price it.
I like how you approach this, because a lot of people think product market fit is product, but it's all these components together that somehow need to fit, that create a flywheel. Have you transitioned?
Absolutely.
Have you Are you still on the sales-led growth motion, or is it in the meantime also a part of it product-led?
So for us, it's we went through a period of understanding what the future customer was going to look for. And I'm a big fan of understanding not necessarily what's going to be different, but what is going to be the same over a long period of time. People are always going to want to know where their things are, what condition they're in, who has them. They're always going to want instant, easy access to all the information regarding their assets. So for us, it was just about continuing to evolve the application itself to something that was relevant and modern. And if you see the juxtaposition of what's happening now in SaaS, you had these traditional companies like Salesforce and lots of other SaaS companies we both know the names of that essentially built a product that fit a niche. And now you've got this new technology that's come out that a lot of people say it's the destruction of the SaaS industry. It's these agent-based systems that are going to be doing everything. And where I kind of fall in that is my hypothesis is essentially every SaaS company is now a container for AI. And we happen to be a container for anything related to asset tracking and management. And we leverage AI. So anything that AI can do for you just out on the regular web, you can do within Asset Panda. Our mantra is our clients never have to leave the application. So essentially, that's how we're evolving.
That's interesting, and it's a good way to evolve. Which brings me to another trait in my book, Mastering the Art of Curiosity. How is that play out as an advantage for you? Or how do you ensure that this is always top of mind with people? Because it's very easy also when you get success to think, okay, now we're there, and you get complacent about things.
No, absolutely. The curiosity and grit and sticking with something and learning, it's a core component of the future success of any business. So for me, I love technology. I love the way it evolves. I like the way people use it. I love that you and I can be having this conversation. You're sitting in Spain, I'm sitting in Dallas, and we get to go back and forth and have a discussion over the internet. This is amazing. When you and I were growing up, this stuff was only something you dream of. You see it in like a cartoon, like the Jetsons or something. So for us, so for me, I've constantly been curious, and the curiosity really lies within what problem are we solving for the customers? And the only way to really understand that is to talk to them, to see how they're using it and see how the problems they have are evolving.
Let me make a small interruption here. Rex just explained what drives lasting success in his business. Curiosity and grit, sticking with something and learning, are core components of future success. For him, curiosity lies in the understanding what problem they're solving for their customers. The only way to know is to talk to them, see how they're using your product, and watch how their problems evolve. And this is what remarkable software companies do. They master the art of curiosity, staying focused on evolving customer problems, not yesterday's assumptions. Secondly, they focus on the essence, solving the actual problem customers have, not one they think they should have. And lastly, they turn customers into fans by continuously adopting as customers need change. Want to master these traits as well? Simply read my book. I've made the electronic version available for free. Just visit theremarkableeffect.com to grab your copy, and inspiration will spark within 10 minutes. Back to the interview.
And I think I can speak for most of us. Like, our lives are being changed pretty dramatically right now with AI. I mean, the way that most people search for things now is through AI and not necessarily a search bar. And that's been a radical transformation that we've seen in our own data over the last 6, 9 months. And when you think about the capabilities of what AI is going to bring to us and the ability for us to supercharge the work that we're doing, it's incredible. We're all basically on the same level now. You might be really good at math. I might be really good at writing, but now you're really good at writing and I'm really good at math. Like, it doesn't matter what it is. As long as we learn how to master these tools, we're going to be able to unlock a level of human ingenuity and creativity that I couldn't have even have dreamed of, 5, 10 years ago. It's extraordinary. So that's the curiosity. I wake up every day and I'm the guy, I love to read all the news and I like to see what's new and what's different. So I've always just been naturally a very curious person.
Yeah, well, that's a point I want to zoom in on as well, because I mean, you being a curious person doesn't mean that everybody else in the company is a curious person, and I mean, you need it at any level. So what I saw when I was reading into like what you've built over time is that you got a framework for fast growth, leadership, clarity, communication, culture.
Absolutely.
Is this a part of this?
Yeah, I believe in communicating thoroughly and in depth and lots of transparency, so people understand what the mission is and what their part, what their role is in that mission. I think culture is incredibly important, making sure that people see that you're vulnerable, that you are committed to frank discussion. I'll give you an example. When AI started becoming a thing, a lot of people, not just in my company, but I think in every company, are thinking, oh my God, how does this affect me? How does this affect my company? Should I use it? Should I not use it? And, it was my job to make sure that everybody felt safe and everybody embraced the concept of using it to make their lives better. AI isn't about spying on your employees. It's not about knowing every minute of everything that they're doing. It's about saving them time. It's about helping. If we have questions about how clients are perceiving our new feature set or pricing program, we should just go into AI and we should get a summarization of every conversation that's happened in the company and instantly get the result instead of having to go to each person and say, hey, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? What do your customers say? So getting people to adopt AI or technologies like that, it starts at the top. You've got to make sure that people understand that this is meant to help them. It's not meant to replace them. And it should ultimately make all of our lives easier. And it's okay to be wrong too. Let's experiment. Let's try things. Let's fail. That's the other thing that I like to do is I like to fail. And because I know that if I'm failing, it means I'm trying new things. It means I'm adapting. It means I'm being curious. It means I want to change. And it means I want to provide a better service to the clients and ultimately a better experience for all the employees in the company. But I don't think you can have success at anything unless you're willing to fail and fail a lot. That's where creativity comes.
It is exactly, and it's I think you said the right words there. It's taking away that fear, showing what good looks like, and applaud for experimenting, even if it's not successful. And from there, if everybody starts to show that, then it actually can it can create a very compounding effect.
Yes, and that's exactly what we're experiencing at Asset Panda. Over years and years of trial and tribulation and learning things and, failing and learning. So I think you have an idea, you implement it, you most likely fail, you learn from it, you adapt, and then you succeed. That's what I think it looks like. And if you look at the talent base we have at Asset Panda, it's just I have a big smile on my face because we have some amazing, extraordinary people. And they're passionate about solving our clients' issues. They listen and they have adopted the concept of curiosity and providing feedback and adapting the platform and learning. And it's a very special company and a very special place to work. We're fully remote. We've got employees all over the world. And watching them interact and work together, that's the other big piece of this. I think the world's changing and I believe if you create a great environment for the employees, they'll create a great experience for your clients. And we want to give our employees the autonomy. We want to treat them like adults. We want to try to get ideas from every facet of the company and every area of the business. That's the other thing that too that's I find fascinating about AI is it's sort of leveling the playing field across disciplines. So I'll give you an example. Traditional companies, you have silos. Sales is over here, marketing is over here, customer success is here, products here, devs here, and they all operate independently of another. I think the way the world's changing is instead of silos, it looks like a wheel. And if you're a sales rep and you have a fantastic conversation with the customer about a unique use case, we leverage AI to take that conversation and turn it into marketing content. So the next person that has that information or has that same kind of problem can essentially find themselves and see themselves in the content created that came out of the sales department, then not just traditional marketing.
That's the way to look at these things these days, and then you can actually create a much larger company with a lot more leverage than was, well, technically possible before that. Even with or without AI, because a lot of people think, okay,
Yes.
leverage comes from AI right now, but so much leverage also comes from, like you say, this enablement that people have the autonomy to do things, and that they act as a team rather than individual silos.
It creates that flywheel. And for us, the last few years have been about repositioning the application, getting AI into the application, and almost felt like the analogy would be building a house. And making sure the foundation is incredibly strong so it can withstand anything. And that's essentially what we've been doing. A lot of the heavy lifting and a lot of the deep work we've been doing have been on the back end of the system and making sure that we had the capability to scale to virtually any size and any level. And we have that in Pro. So, as the company has been growing, we went through the first 5 years. We're kind of trying to find product market fit and then 3,000% growth over a few year period. And then you kind of level out a little bit. Well, now we're ready for the next big jump. So, we're putting the rocket boosters on the application, and you'll see a pretty dramatic shift in the value proposition of what our application is. And it's to me, when I look at it, I'm so proud of it. It's like jaw-dropping when you see the combination of AI in a no-code platform like this and the value it can bring to the clients. Just astonishing.
I like the passion that I see in your eyes, but
Absolutely.
people have to believe me because it's an audio-only podcast. So, but I mean, you're touching upon a topic that is super dear to my heart: positioning, repositioning. What was that moment where you realized, hey, now we have to reposition, Was that a moment of where things started to go bad, or was it the moment, okay, hey, we are not getting the full potential of what we have in our hands here?
I'd say all the above. So in the early stages, I was convinced this was going to be a better consumer application than business application. So we focused primarily on the mobile app. We pivoted towards businesses. That was one. Then we went from purpose-built product to no-code platform. That was another. And now we're entering this generative AI world where people expect customization. So they expect, when I get marketing, I don't know how you feel about this, Tom, but when I get marketing, I expect it to be for me, not for everybody else in the world, but specifically to Rex Curzius. If I'm going to look at it, it's going to be hyper personalized to me. Well, AssetPanda needed to evolve and do that. And so we've done that as well. But it's this constant journey and flywheel of listening and changing and adapting and preparing for hypergrowth. And that's essentially where we are right now with AssetPanda. We've gone through the back end of getting the house in order, and we've solved problems like languages. The pro is in quite a few languages. That's coming out in the next couple of weeks. Instant translation in the application, currencies around the world. So you're going to see a much more adaptive, responsive, hyper-personalized experience coming into AssetPanda.
Always good to see, that innovation drive. That's also what I've seen in reading into what you've been doing. That innovation, of course, is everybody's talking about innovation, but how you bring it to life inside the company is that these are examples of it. It's always taking it to the next level, challenging the team, challenging yourself, even maybe challenging your customers to take things to the next level. Anything to add to that?
Absolutely. It's just the concept of the employees too. You look at some of the greatest innovations that are coming in AssetPanda and some of the things that that are just amazing in terms of the efficiencies and time savings and things. They came from the employees. It wasn't me sitting in front of everybody with a whiteboard saying, "Hey, what about this? What about that?" It was individual contributors that have been given the autonomy and the freedom to explore concepts and ideas that they thought would be beneficial to the application, listening to the customer base and then their own imagination. And seeing these things come to life is just a beautiful thing. The company, in order for us to scale and continue to be curious and innovative and to meet the demands of the future, it can't come from one person. It's got to come from the entire team. And the team at AssetPanda is world class, and they are focused and they are driven. And when you get a company, when you can feel the flywheel turning and you know their best intention is for the client, they want to help the client, not just sell an application. They want to create something that's bigger and better than anything they might have managed before. And sometimes if you ask the client, "What are you looking for?" they might give you a response. And that response may make a lot of sense, but there's also times where we can see what they might want that they don't know that they want yet. And that's what Pro is about. And that's what the integration with Ursa is about and the invention of Ursa. It's, yes, we can no code this application. We can make it look exactly the way you want it to look and feel and work. But let us show you what else you can do. And once people start seeing the what else you can do with Ursa in our application, it's almost, I mean, it's sort of jaw-dropping. It's like, yeah, I thought about tracking all my assets here, but I never thought about instantly building training or taking a video of something and having it configure the application. It's astonishing the capabilities that that the combination of a no-code platform plus AI can do. It's the future, I think, of how everything's going to work.
Well, it requires people to level up as well. I mean, I've recently written a long-form essay around sales confidence. That's where it starts. If you understand the differentiation of power of the platform, then you can start to look for the perfect fit. And customers always will, I mean, you ask them what they want or what they need or what the requirements are, they'll give you an answer. But it's not stopping there. It's being curious, keep asking more, connecting a number of dots and say, hey, you think you want this, but based on what I hear, this is actually, I think, what your big problem is. And that's what we can solve for you. And yeah, that
Oh,
is.
yeah. Oftentimes people come to us with a very specific problem. I need to track blank, and I've got this number of them. Well, fine, this is how we do this, but have you thought about all these other things?
True.
And it's fun to see the interaction with the clients and the kind of see them, their faces kind of light up with, oh, I didn't realize I could do that and that and that. So it's fun to watch the evolution too.
Exactly. I want to go into also the business of being, bootstrapped. You've bootstrapped this company from the ground up until today. What I've understood is that you're around 50 million in ARR.
Yes.
What has been the most impactful thing that you've uncovered when it comes to growing profits?
So for me, I wanted to remain bootstrapped because I wanted the ability for the company to remain pure to solving the business problems that the clients had. I didn't want to bring investors in and then have a 48-month window where I had to create enough value to sell it to somebody else. I wanted to create something that would be an enduring brand that could last the test of time. And it's very hard to do with companies, even the greatest companies in the world. A lot of them eventually become obsolete for one reason or another. You can think of companies like cell phone companies like BlackBerry, or maybe computer companies like the Commodore. They come in early, but then why don't they succeed over time? Jim Collins got a great book called Good to Great that is one of my favorite kind of go-to books about the topic. But for me, it was about bootstrapping it to give me the autonomy to solve the problem over a period of time. And then basically leveraging the success we have with our clients to fund the future development of the application.
Yeah,
And,
true.
if you got into the back end of AssetPanda, you might look at some of the things that I've done and maybe you might be a little critical. You might think, okay, at this point, if you raised this amount of money, you could have grown by X. I'm sort of like the turtle in the race with the rabbit. I'm slow and steady wins the race. And so it's proven to work out very well for us. We have been able to work with our clients to leverage the revenue that we have to invest in people and processes and development and to continue to work through the application. And as AI became a thing, it's creating this inverse relationship between growth and increasing expenses. It actually sort of changes the whole model. You can scale now and you don't necessarily have to, invest a massive amount of money in order to do it.
True.
So as we're looking at our prospects, we're really excited about the autonomy we have. We can make our own decisions the way we want to make them. We can make them in the best interest of our clients. And I'm a big fan of bootstrapping for that. Obviously my older brother bootstrapped MailChimp, and that was a big influence on me as well. But I'm glad that we did the way we did. It was very hard. I'm not telling you it was easy.
No.
And there were a lot of sacrifices and there were a lot of tough situations that we ended up in because of it. But here we are, 14 years later. And we've turned the application into, I would consider, a world-renowned brand. A lot of people have heard of our brand and seen our brand. They know it. We did quite a bit of business with schools. So even kids now that grew up maybe checking in and checking out their laptops at universities and high schools around the world, now they're in the workforce and they've had some experience and exposure to our brand. So our job is to make sure that the brand is scalable and the application itself is easy to use, easy to implement, works in every language, and can solve a wide variety of business problems. And that's essentially what AssetPanda Pro, powered by Ursa, is.
Nice. Now, I mean, what you talk about in a nutshell at the end is okay, if you measure your success by the impact you help your customers create, that value will come to you one way or the other. And that is,
100%.
it's coming to you in ways you cannot even almost forecast for.
That's 100% correct. If you have good intentions and you focus on your employees and you focus on the problem the customers have, it reaps rewards. It may take a lot longer and cost a lot more money to get there, but if you stay true to that, then you'll be rewarded over time.
Exactly. It's playing the game to play the game rather than to win it short term. What has been a metric that you've stopped tracking that you thought was very important in the early days?
Oh, that's a great question. Let me think about that. So, we used to be hyper-focused on the value of the assets being put into the system. That was something that was an important indicator. We thought about that in terms of pricing. If you're tracking a generator that's worth $10 million versus a laptop that's worth $800, Is that an interesting metric to track? We found that the reasons why people track things aren't necessarily purely focused on loss prevention, but more on time savings. So that was the other thing. When we looked at the cost of ownership of the application and what the return on investment was in the early stages, it was, well, we can help you save roughly X amount on the amount of equipment that you might have lost or misplaced in the past. And now the metric's much more focused on the amount of time that it saves the people that use it. Because that's, if they use it more and it saves them more time, by definition, they're going to lose less equipment.
It's the
So
stickiness. Yeah, true.
it's the stickiness of it. Yeah. And it's the time that people can save that I think is the most critical factor.
Exactly. Yeah, it's interesting how you look at it from a customer perspective, whereby the things that you think are important are not that important to them.
Exactly. 100%.
That comes from trial and error, and to really carefully look at what's happening behind the scenes almost. Now, the last question here. 13 years in on the journey. Next 13 years to come. Based on all the lessons that you've learned so far, what would be a do and what would be a don't that you'd like to share with other entrepreneurs? Things that you wish you've known before.
So the first one is, I don't have the answers. You don't have all the answers. No one has all the answers, and that's okay. This is not about perfection. This is a constant process of trial and error. So it's not about being perfect, and it's also not about being right. It's about being curious and having the ability and the wherewithal to have grit and to deal with failure and learn from that failure, adapt to succeed. It's there's no straight line. There's no, I wish there was a magic bullet. I wish I could, kick a soccer ball all the way across the field and score a goal every time. But there's nuances and techniques, and you have to get the right players involved with the right strategy. So I think it's about knowing that you're not in it just to turn around and try to make a little bit of money. You're in it truly to solve a problem that people have. And solving a problem that people have over time as it evolves requires a lot of grit and fortitude and staying with something and listening and changing and adapting. And then when new technologies like AI present themselves, learning how to incorporate that into your vision and just constantly evolving. So I would just tell entrepreneurs, this isn't about being right. It's about being curious and constantly willing to try things and evolve. That's the way I look at it.
Nice words. Where can people go to find out more about the company and to hire you?
Yeah, so I'm on LinkedIn, so feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn. AskThePanda.com is always sort of the bellwether for where you can find out more about the product. I would say stay tuned. If you're interested in how SaaS companies evolve into this AI world, I think Asset Panda is going to be one heck of a case study for it. As more and more features become available in Ursa, get curious. I would encourage people to go out and check out Ursa. What is that? How does it work? How does it intertwine with my day-to-day workflows? How can it benefit me? The evolution of Asset Panda, the world of Asset Panda, if you will, is opening up pretty dramatically, sort of as we speak. And my vision in the beginning was always to become the global standard for asset tracking and management. It was a common problem that we all have. You might, run a chemical company and someone else might run an automobile company, and they might be different assets that you have to track, but generally you have to track them for the same types of reasons. So, for us, it's the ability to scale in every language, every currency, leveraging AI and the containerization of our SaaS platform to adopt to it. That I think will really give us a leg up on the competition. And it's going to be a lot of fun to watch it roll out.
Let's see this happening. Let's put a point in the agenda in the next 5 years, or in 5 years' time, to see how this has evolved again. Thanks, Lex,
Absolutely.
for sharing all the wisdom, for sharing the lessons that you've learned.
Absolutely. And thank you for having me. I love the work that you're doing and helping entrepreneurs, learn from each other. It's important. So thank you for doing what you're doing.
Thank you. Pleasure. And this wraps up my conversation with Rex Gurtjes, founder founder and CEO of Asset Panda. If you got value from this episode, please share it with other SaaS founders who need to hear this as well. And if you got 10 seconds, a quick rating or review on Apple Podcasts will help more people to find these conversations. Thank you for listening to the Remarkable SaaS Podcast. If you want more insights like this, subscribe to my daily email, Espresso with Ton. It's a 2-minute shot of clarity for SaaS founders who want to create pull, not push. You can sign up, along with getting my book, at valueinspiration.com. See you in the next episode.